cottage whiskey. Whiskey is the thing. It makes you feel so frisky. It makes you laugh and sing. So let's all have a ghillie and have a lot of fun. Let's drink to good old whiskey. There's a dram for everyone. Now whiskey is the devil, so some people say, but that's a lot of nonsense, for we're all here today. No evil thoughts among us, just out to have some play. So drink your good old whiskey and we'll chase our cares away. It's the Scottish whiskey, whiskey is the thing. It makes you feel so frisky, it makes you laugh and sing. So let's all have a kitty and have a lot of fun. Let's drink to good old whiskey, there's a dram for everyone. Wherever Scotsmen gather, no matter where they roam, they love to get together and sing the songs of home. The mountain glens and valleys, the rivers flowing free, and always while they're singing, they've a dram or two or three. Here's to Scottish whiskey, whiskey is the thing. It makes you feel so frisky, it makes you laugh and sing. So let's all have a ghillie and have a lot of fun. Let's drink to good old whiskey, there's a dram for everyone. Marching o'er the heather or strolling through the glen, you'll always hear the tourists say he'll aye be back again. But it isn't just the scenery or the days of auld lang syne. It's whiskey, good old whiskey, that makes our land so fine. Here's to Scottish whiskey, whiskey is the thing. It makes you feel so frisky, it makes you laugh and sing. So let's all have a kitty and have a lot of fun. Let's drink to good old whiskey, there's a dram for everyone. Let's drink to good old whiskey, there's a dram.
It's time for the greatest show on radio today, the Clan Kaley Show, starring the Colonel. How are you, Colonel?
Fine. It's a little cool outside, but other than that, it's getting on pretty good.
Yeah, I went outside and looked down to see if I had my pants on. Cold out there. Isn't that right, Black Dog?
It's cold out.
I've been
out
in Chicago,
yet.
And
I'll still take this over to Chicago, so.
Okay. All right. Engineer number two.
Yeah, it's good to be here. You're right, it's cold. But I got my fireplace rejuvenated, my gas logs, and I got a place I can go and get warm. So
all right.
I'm happy about that.
Oh, yeah. Tori, how are you, sir?
I'm fine. I got a little joke. We'll see if it's a joke.
Okay.
Let's see if it's funny. This man was driving his car, and blue lights came on behind him, and he was pulled over, and state trooper pulled him over and said, he asked the officer, "Why are you stopping me?" He said, "Well, sir, I don't know if you know this or not. Do you know how fast you were going?" He said, "No, I don't." He says, "You were doing over 80 miles an hour in a 35 mile an hour zone." And he said, "Oh," he says, "Well, where were you going in such a hurry?" He said, "Well, I tell you, I just killed my wife. I chopped her up in little pieces, and I put her in the trunk, and I was heading to the dump." And so he immediately pulled out his gun, called for backup, got them all out there, and they surrounded him. They got him out of the car and handcuffed him. And one of the officers said, "Somebody tells me that you," this officer says, "that you said you cut up your wife and killed her, and cut her up, and she's in the trunk of the car." He said, "Yeah," and he said, "I bet he told you I was speeding, too."
That's a good one.
All right, it must be joke day. This old man, about 75 years old, had been saving up money all his life because he wanted to buy him a Porsche. He finally got him enough money to do it, and he was driving down the road, and he got it up to 70. Thought that pretty good. He got it up to 80. That felt pretty good. Got it up to 90, and then the blue lights started flashing behind him. He thought, "Well, I can outrun this guy." So he finally gets up to 120 miles an hour, and he thinks, "Wait a minute, this is crazy. What am I doing?" So he pulls over, and the cop comes up and says, "Do you know how fast you were going?" Yeah, I was going pretty fast. The cop says, I tell you what, if you can give me an excuse that I've never heard, I'll let you go. The guy said, well, you see, 20 years ago, my wife ran away with a highway patrolman, and I thought you were bringing her back. How are you, Flathead?
A little cold, but we're proud to be here.
Engineer number one.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here, and I've got a joke. I don't know if it'll top either one of those, so I'll save it. I'll save it.
You're going to save that one?
As usual, I ruined my joke because one of the officers said was, after he opened up the trunk, there wasn't anything in it.
Well,
then he asked him.
Yeah.
There you go.
And then the guy said, yeah, you bet that officer said I was speeding, too.
Oh, this must be joke day. These two nuns were driving down the highway, and doing 90 miles an hour. The cop pulls them over. He's riding out the ticket, and one of the passengers, she was sitting over there just crying and shaking and carrying on. And the cop said, that's not that bad. You know, it's just a little speeding ticket. It's not that bad. And she goes, yeah, but that's not the problem. And he said, well, what is the problem? He said, well, you said that sign said you're supposed to be driving 55, not 90. That's a highway number. And she said, we just got off of Highway 120. We'll be right back before we lose this whole show.
A long time ago when the earth was green,
wow,
and there was more kinds of animals than you've ever seen. They'd run around free while the earth was being born. But the loveliest of them all was the unicorn. There was green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, the loveliest of all was the unicorn. Now God seen some sinning and it gave him pain, and he says, stand back, I'm going to make it rain. He says, hey, Brother Noah, I'll tell you what to do. Build me a floating zoo and take some of them green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget my unicorn. Old Noah was there to answer the call. He finished up making the ark just as the rain started falling. He marched in the animals two by two, and he called out as they went through, hey Lord, I got you green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but Lord, I'm so forlorn, I just can't see no unicorn. Then Noah looked out through the driving rain. Them unicorns were hiding, playing silly games, kicking and splashing while the rain was pouring. Oh, them silly unicorns. There was green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees. Noah cried, close the door, 'cause the rain is pouring, and we just can't wait for no unicorn. The ark started moving, it drifted with the tide. Then unicorns looked up from the rocks and they cried, and the waters came down and sort of floated them away. And that's why you never seen a unicorn to this very day. You'll see green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, you're never gonna see no unicorn.
Grove.
Florence LaRoche, 74, of Ringgold, passed away on Saturday, January 21st, at her home. Arrangements by Heritage Funeral Home and Crematory, Battlefield Parkway. Charles Michael Farmer, 60, of Ringgold, went home to be with the Lord on Thursday, January 19th, at his residence, surrounded by his loving family. Funeral services were held at 1 p.m. Saturday in the funeral home chapel, with Brother Jim Chastain and Brother Bradley Battling officiating. Heritage Funeral Home and Crematory, Battlefield Parkway, in charge of arrangements. Carolyn June Coleman, 79, of Fort Oglethorpe, went home to be with the Lord on Monday, January 23rd. Funeral services will be held Friday, January 27th at 11 a.m. in the South Crest Chapel, with Pastor Joe Gill officiating. Interment will follow in the Tennessee, Georgia
Memorial Park. The family will receive friends on Thursday, which is today, from 4 to 8 in South Crest Chapel of Lane Funeral Home and Crematory in Rossville. Mrs. Linda Mae Middleton, 76, of Fort Oglethorpe, went to be with her Lord and Savior on Thursday, January the 19th. A funeral service for Linda was conducted at Parkway Baptist Church on Tuesday, January 24th, at 11 o'clock in the morning, with Reverend David Sampson officiating. Interment was at Lakewood Memorial Gardens South. Lane Funeral Home and Crematory, South Crest Chapel, is honored to serve Linda's family in this most difficult of times.
Stephen Todd Barksdale, 55, of Ringgold, passed away quietly at his home on Sunday, January 22nd. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, January 28th. In the Wallace Stewart Chapel. Burial will be in the Plowman Cemetery in Apison, Tennessee. The family will receive friends from 11 a.m. until time of service on Saturday at the funeral home. Arrangements are by Wilson and Son Funeral Home.
Luther Gene Winder, 74, of Ringgold, went on to be with his Lord and Savior on Tuesday, January the 24th. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, January the 27th, in the Wallace Stewart Chapel, with Pastor John Dean Skipper officiating. Burial will follow in Catoosa Memorial Gardens. The family will receive friends Friday from 12 noon until the time of the service at the funeral home. Arrangements by Wilson Funeral Home. Michael Mike Terry Patrick, age 71, of Fort Oglethorpe, went home to be with the Lord Sunday, January the 22nd. Funeral services were held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, January the 25th, at Peavine Baptist Church, with ministers Denny Patrick and Neil Brown. Burial was at Tennessee, Georgia Memorial Park. Arrangements by W.L. Wilson and Sons Funeral Home, Fort Oglethorpe.
Howard Martin Kuykendall Jr., 75, of Ringgold, passed away Thursday. After high school, enlisted as a merchant marine and then served his country during the Vietnam War, and was an airborne ranger. Graveside services will be held at 1 on Monday, January the 30th, in Chattanooga National Cemetery, with Brother Ryan Stoker officiating. Arrangements by Wilson Funeral Home, Wallace Stewart Chapel, Ringgold. Harry Lewis Cabin, age 91, of Graceville, passed away Thursday. He served his country in the U.S. Navy during the Korean War, was a proud veteran. Funeral services were held at 1 Tuesday, the 24th, at the chapel with Reverend Danny Henson. Burial was at Graysville Cemetery, and arrangements by Wilson Funeral Home, Wallace Stewart Chapel, Ringgold. Sarah Faye Montgomery, 61, of Ringgold, passed away after her 22-year-long fight with cancer on Monday. Arrangements by the Heritage Funeral Home and Crematory, Battlefield Parkway.
Robert Foley, Captain, U.S. Army, 25th Infantry Division, Vietnam, November 1966. For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity in action to the rest of his life, above and beyond the call of duty, Captain Foley's company was ordered to extricate another company of the battalion, moving through the dense jungle to the aid of the besieged Unit, Company A, encountered strong enemy force occupying well-concealed defensive positions, and the company's leading element quickly sustained several casualties. Captain Foley immediately ran forward to the scene of the most intensive action to direct the company's efforts. Deploying one platoon on the flank, he led the other two platoons in an attack on the enemy in the face of intense fire. During this action, both the radio operators accompanying him were wounded. At grave risk to himself, he defied the enemy's murderous fire, helped the wounded operators to take a position where they could receive medical care. As he moved forward again, one of his machine gun crews was wounded. Seizing the weapon, he charged forward, firing the machine gun, shouting orders, rallying his men, and thus maintaining the movement of the attack. Until increasingly heavy enemy fire, he shouted orders, rallying his men. Under an increasingly heavy enemy fire, he ordered his assistant to take cover, and alone, he continued to advance, firing the machine gun until the wounded had been evacuated and the attack in his areas had resumed. When movement on the flank was halted by the enemy's defense, he moved to personally direct this critical phase of the battle. Leading the renewed effort, he was blown off his feet and wounded by an enemy grenade. Despite his painful wounds, he refused medical aid and preserved in the forefront of the attack on the enemy redoubt. He led the assault on several enemy machine gun emplacements and single-handedly destroyed three such positions. His outstanding personal leadership under intense enemy fire during the fierce battle, which lasted for several hours, inspired his men to heroic efforts and was instrumental in the element's success of the operation. Captain Foley's magnificent courage, selfless concern for his men, and professional skill reflect the most credit upon himself, the United States Army.
And as is our custom, we read from John 15:13 as follows. Greater love hath no man than this, than a man lay down his life for his friends. And further, we have a toast at this time after the reading of the Medal of Honor citation. And here is the toast. Eternally happy are they who find themselves face to face with their Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, today, sitting at the right hand of God, the Father Almighty.
Peace be to God. All right, local newsman, what are we going to talk about?
Oh, I'm sitting here looking at the Coosa County News dated Wednesday, January the 25th. And the lead, the article on the front page with some pictures is about a Fort Oglethorpe makeover. And apparently the city has got all these ambitious plans about what they want to do in Fort Oglethorpe. And they've got a picture of apartments lining U.S. 27, three stories high, and it looks like about a quarter of a mile long. Of course, none of that is there now. That's their plan, to put in apartments, I think. But anyway, they've got a lot of other things, and they've got another picture in here of putting a new city hall on Barnhart Circle. So they've already fouled up Barnhart Circle. Might as well just do it some more.
Might as well finish it off, yeah.
Yeah, right. Anyway, that was the lead article. The other thing that's interesting on the front page is a picture of Marjorie Taylor Greene and Speaker Kevin McCarthy together. And the article is about Marjorie Taylor Greene being appointed to two committees, and one of them is the House Committee on Oversight and Accountability. Now, Marjorie is going to turn over a bunch of rocks, I think, in that job. There's no telling what she's going to find. But basically, they're supposed to check for the investigate waste, fraud, abuse, and mismanagement of the federal government. I mean, that right yeah. there is more than a full-time job.
Yeah, and Jim, I think Jim Jordan is on there with her.
Okay.
He's the chairman of one of the other committees, but he's going to be on there.
Well, she's on that committee, and then she's also on the House Committee on Homeland Security, which, of course, that deals with the border. And she's talking about all the kind of things they're going to do on the border. And I think I heard they're going to take maybe all of the House Republicans to, I heard this, take them to the border and give them classes on what's going on. So it's not like they just go down there and stay an hour. They're going to have an overall program that they're going to present to, I don't know how many, half of the Republicans or whatever. But anyway, they're going to have a class on what's happening at the border and what, in other words, what's the job of the Border Patrol, what are their problems, on and on and on. So I think that would be good to educate these guys, these men and women. Anyway, so Marjorie Taylor Greene, I think she's going to be in the news. She's been in the news before. But
they canceled her.
Oh, yeah.
On ABC, NBC, CBS, Twitter, Facebook, everything that you could possibly do to a person to remove them from the public square, they did it to her.
So now she's gone from a pariah to number one.
Well, not maybe not number one, but she's a player in the House.
That's the way it is in politics.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about it, what the Democrats did to her is just totally uncalled for. I mean, how many people does she represent? I think it's a half a million or more.
This almost a million. That every representative represents the same number.
Okay, yeah. So she represented a million people in the state of Georgia, and the Democrats just took her off of everything.
Not off of one committee.
Oh, I know. She wasn't allowed
to be on any. She wasn't allowed to be on any committee. And what was their excuse?
Oh, I just Pelosi just made up one, you know. Now, thank goodness that Kevin McCarthy has stuck to his guns, and Adam Schiff and this other guy, he's not going to let them serve on the Intelligence Committee. I don't know if you knew that, but they tried to put him on. The Democrats tried to put him on.
What do you think about them taking him off the committee?
Well, I think he's probably right.
Well, and think about it. He was the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, and this guy was taking information and then coming out to the American public and lying about it. I mean, the guy, I forget.
And the other one, Schiff, was sleeping with a communist spy.
No, that was Solwell.
That was Solwell. Yes.
So, I said the other guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other guy.
So, I mean, anyway, you can't make this stuff up.
Well, Schiff, what's interesting about Green, I don't know how many people she represents. Let's say she represents a million.
Get up a little closer to the mic, please.
Out of that million people, I bet 900,000 agree with her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You're exactly right.
Even half the Democrats.
Well, yeah. Even if they won't admit it.
Well, right. Schiff said he's going to run for Senate. He's going to.
Who?
Schiff said he's going to run for Senate
him.
For. He's going to run because I guess Dianne Feinstein is not going to run for re-election.
Does she still have the communist CCP chauffeur?
I'm sure she does. She's Feinstein is what? I think she's got to be 90 years old already. So.
I guess.
Well, maybe she. Well, I won't tell you. Who knows? There's another interesting thing in here. Sonny Perdue, there's a picture of him in here, and it's talking about a decline in enrollment at the University System of Georgia. That the enrollment is down 1.2% this year, and it was down that much last year. So the enrollment into the university system is declining.
And that means it's below pandemic levels, because last year we were in the pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you think, well, it dropped last year. Well, it dropped again.
So it doesn't give a reason for it, but...
you know, it could be that people are reevaluating the value of a college education.
Oh, yeah, could be.
In some cases, it's just not worth what it costs.
Well, you get out with a four-year degree, and then you can't get a job. Well, you don't know how to do anything.
Well, the thing is, it costs you two ways. It costs you money to go, and then it costs you when you get out in the world. After you've been indoctrinated, you don't know what the world is.
No, you don't.
Well, there are people who we know real well who say that they will never, ever pay off their college debt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Until they, in other words, the day they die, it will, I guess.
Yeah, well, if they live to be 62 and they haven't paid it off, they can apply to have it canceled.
You know, you lose a third way also. During those 4 years, you could be working.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you could be learning something that's of value.
Useful.
Useful. Valuable.
Learning a trade.
Helpful.
Well, that's another thing. There's a value to a local college education where you don't have to go off and you can stay at home and go to school.
Well, there are going to be thousands of jobs. We talked about it last week. In South Georgia and North Georgia, in industries that are going to be being built, and they don't need a four-year degree in history or psychology to get a job there. Anyway,
they would prefer you didn't have that.
There's another article in here about, did you know there was titanium in the ground near the Okefenokee Swamp? Oh, you did. So you must have read the article.
Now, we've been fighting that for years. I was with the Nature Conservancy for a while.
Oh, okay.
So this was 20 years ago, and they're looking at mining it out of the swamp. But a lot of people don't want you messing around in the swamp.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, is it the swamp that created the titanium, or was it there before, and now there's a swamp over it?
I don't know.
Anyway, supposedly, the article didn't give much information, but this is adjoining the swamp, Okefenokee Swamp, and people are, of course, afraid that it will, quote, drain portions of the Okefenokee Swamp if they go in there and mine this titanium out.
The swamp is interesting. You take we had a guide to take us through the swamp. And you're out in the middle of the swamp with grass and trees and buzzards and all this other stuff. And he says, well, why don't you get out of the boat? And I did. I got out of the boat, and the water was about waist deep. And what the floor of the swamp is nothing more than exposed small roots. It's spongy. It's it's easy to walk on barefooted.
Yeah, but you got to watch the alligators and the copperheads.
Well, I guess you got to watch. Don't fall in an alligator hole. But other than that, you're out in the middle of nowhere. And he says, "Get out of the boat." And it's just the water's up to your waist.
My son, he had two boys, and they were in the Boy Scouts. So one of their trips was to go navigate the Okefenokee Swamp. So they got up. I don't remember exactly where they started, whether it's near White Cross or what. But anyway, they got in a canoe, and they navigated and actually spent the night, at least one night, maybe more than one, in the swamp, and ended up, and there's a river that it discharges out into the ocean. I don't remember the name of it.
St. Mary's.
Okay. So they went all the way through the swamp in a canoe.
Yeah, the swamp, they have trails, and the different trails have different colors of signs. So all you got to do is follow the colors to stay on the trail. And if you want to stay at night, they have platforms mm-hmm. to where you can get your sleeping bag and everything. The problem is the coons will just absolutely cover you up. Between the coons and mosquitoes.
I can believe it. I can believe it. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. We probably need titanium, but I don't know if there's titanium anywhere else or not. But apparently this is not the first time that somebody, a company, has tried to come in and do that. You were just talking about it. You were familiar with it before. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. And then the other thing that I just didn't know about was that, guess how many people applied for insurance under the Affordable Care Act in Georgia this year? For this coming year?
No clue.
846,000. Wow. 8% of the entire population of Georgia.
What kind of insurance?
Well, it's health insurance.
It's Obamacare.
It's a part of Obamacare, I guess.
Oh, medical insurance.
Yeah. Yeah. And according to the article, 80% of the people who enroll, well, first of all, you've got to enroll, you've got to fall somewhere between annual income of $13,590 and $54,360. So you got to fall within that range. I don't know what happens if you're below $13,000.
I don't think it matters.
They just figure you don't have a job or don't have an income.
You're not alive.
Right. Anyway, you got to fall in that category to apply. But anyway, 80% of the people that apply, their monthly payment for that insurance is $10 a month.
That's a good deal.
Yeah.
What I'm getting at is I know why.
Where do we apply?
Right, 846,000. I know why 846,000 people applied.
Yeah, we're paying the difference.
Well, of course.
Of course we are.
So,
well, we were paying the difference anyway. Yeah. The problem was the government wasn't getting their cut and the insurance companies and the taxpayers were taking care of people in emergency rooms and the like.
Well, apparently under the new Inflation Reduction Act passed by Congress, there is an increased dollar amount of subsidies for purchasing the health care plan.
Oh, so they get $30 a month
who knows?
To apply for $10 worth of insurance.
Exactly. Who knows what the deal is?
You get $20 for filling out the form.
You know, if 800,000 applied, I wonder how many were accepted.
Probably all of them.
Oh, this is all. They I think the way it said signed up.
Okay.
Signed up. It not just applied. They actually signed up. They're good to go. 846,000 of them.
They draw.
They draw.
You know, I remember when Obamacare first came out, and I was talking to this one guy, and he was touting how great Obamacare was because it was costing him $50 a month for insurance. And I said, what's your maximum lifetime? And he said, my what? I said, how much it's going to pay for, and when it hits that, it stops. And he says, where would I find that? I said, it's going to be right on your declaration page. And he said, $1 million. I said, so that's your lifetime. So once you hit $1 million, you have no insurance. I said, what's your out-of-pocket expense? And he said, what's that? I said, how much you're in for before insurance kicks in? I said, your deductible. And $10,000. I said, so at 10,001, your insurance kicks in. I said, so the first 10,000, that's all on you. You want to tell me how great this is? And he says, no. They said, I've got insurance. I said, you just read it, what you've got. These people have no idea what they're getting themselves into.
Well, I'm just thinking about when you show up at the doctor's office or the hospital and you pull out your card that says you've got this, what they think. They think, oh, this is a windfall because the government's going to give us a lot of money, or they're not going to get anything. I don't know.
Probably they're not going to get anything because you got to hit your deductible before you start. You got to hit your deductible first.
So if you make $15,000 a year and your deductible is $10,000, that guy, he ain't ever going to make it.
No.
Well, he's never going there.
I've got another comment for the colonel. I was talking to somebody at the city, and, you know, they're planning on redeveloping the area along Depot Street, you know, all that there where Benton Coal and Supply, all that down through there. And they were telling me that they were getting ready to do things at the old Benton Coal and Supply building. And the environmental folks came after them and said, no, you have to do an environmental study. And you have to do archaeological investigations to determine what is there before you do anything. Did you hear anything about that? Anyway, I thought that you talking about, and they weren't planning on tearing the building down or anything like that. They were just going to use the existing building, probably paint it, maybe put in some partitions or something, but they weren't going to do it.
Which building are we talking about? The rock building?
The Benton Coal and Supply building.
Oh, okay.
And I just thought that just seems to be an overreach.
Why did they bother to tell them what they were going to do? Seems like that was their first mistake.
Well, we're talking the city here. I mean, they probably have to tell somebody. I don't know.
Well, before Benton was there, it was the Widget House, a hotel, a brick hotel. Four rooms on the bottom, four rooms on the top, a veranda out in front with two beautiful oak trees out in front of it. And they tore that down and Benton built his thing. So and of course the hotel was there to accommodate the people coming off the train.
Right.
Also, there were stock pens north of the depot where people where they ship horses and cows and so on out, and there was a turntable somewhere. I don't know where that turntable was.
Well, maybe Mark Brainerd, who did all this investigation, is going to be talking in February, can tell us about it.
But I don't think there's any signs of any of that left. They're not going to find anything.
Anyway, I just thought, you know, the city's not doing a whole lot, I don't think, to the building or anything, but the idea that they're going to have to go through and gargle peanut butter just to do a little work on that building, it makes no sense to me. It's the federal government in operation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I've got some. The Catoosa County Planning Commission had a meeting a couple of nights ago, and they passed an ordinance, and it goes before the entire board
for them to vote on.
This is a chicken meeting, not just chickens. But it also changes the minimum lot size change for residential. It changes it from minimum 3-acre lot to 1-acre lot.
Now, wait a minute. So what that means is if you don't have a sewer system in your location, you can have a one-acre lot.
It changed it from 3 acres to 1 acre.
And can you put chickens on that 1 acre?
They changed the definition. They put chickens in under livestock. So they've included that under livestock now.
Well, it should be. I mean, a chicken is livestock. Well,
does that mean you can have them or can't have them?
Well, apparently there's a lot of people moving from California, New York, and Chicago down here, and they don't understand the definition of what country is, and they don't believe they live in the country. And they don't want to have to look at chickens, so.
No, it's not just look at chickens. They don't want to listen to roosters.
You know, if you don't have a, if you're not connected with the sewer and have a septic tank on a 1 acre lot.
You got a problem.
That don't perk.
Oh, yeah.
They got problems.
Well, they supposedly, I don't know if they still do this, but the normal procedure would be you would get a soil scientist would come out and would take soil samples of your location, and he would identify all the soil types and tell you where you could put your septic tank and basically where you could put a field line.
Yeah, but that's exactly what happened at the house. That is exactly what happened.
Yeah, they have to do a perk test, too.
Well, yeah, they do that. And I mean, but the whole idea behind keeping it to 3 acres, to me, is to prevent failures of your septic system impacting your neighbor next door.
That's called disease.
And
that's why the health department is charged with.
If you have a sewer system where you can connect to, you can have it on a postage stamp. It won't matter.
Well, they're going to come up with a vaccine that is going to take care of this.
Well, do you put it in people or just put the vaccine in the ground?
No, you put it in people because then they can charge money. Pfizer can charge money for it.
Well, here's the other thing that they voted on that they approved that's going to go before the full board, and that is if you have a sawmill for residential, you know, for your own personal use, you can have one. And I guess the meeting got rather contentious.
Do we know who brought up the whole thing about the sawmill?
How many people have their own personal sawmill?
I mean, I think that's a great idea.
I know one who does. Not going to name any names. I guess one of the commissioners, District 2 commissioner.
Has a sawmill?
No, but he was.
He brought it up.
He brought up about the chickens, and so he put down he was looking for feedback, and he wasn't accepting any feedback on his page. And I guess it was rather contentious at the meeting, and there were a lot of people who were speaking out because they believed that living in the country, you should have the right to have chickens.
You know, think about it. Sawmills and chickens go together pretty
good. I agree.
So you could take all the debris from the sawmill and take it over there to the chickens, and they'd eat part of it and mess around in part of it. It worked pretty good.
But apparently, some of the people who spoke up at the meeting, they were visited the next day by
the building inspector?
The sheriff? Deputies?
No, they were visited by code enforcement.
The code enforcement people.
So the people who spoke out at the meeting who were for the chickens, they were visited by code enforcement the next day.
So did the chicken people win or lose in this?
It goes before the full
board.
Well,
I know, but if it passes, what's there now? Is that a win or a loss for the chicken people?
I don't know, because now it's going to be considered livestock, and so it's going to fall under the zoning. I guess it's a win, because if you could have cows and you could have horses and you could have chickens.
See, the problem is the code enforcement people were going around issuing citations to people that had chickens in their yards because the code enforcement people interpreted the name chicken as not being livestock. But if you look in Black's Law Dictionary, among the animals that are considered domestic animals is chickens.
If you can't have chickens, I wonder if you can have guineas.
Well,
I
that's
can,
a,
I can
that would
tell
be
you
quite a change.
Or what about
you
what?
Talk about a racket?
Oh yeah, now that is a racket.
I will tell you what livestock definition is. Are you ready for?
I wouldn't let this out about the guineas. I'd let the county go ahead and pass their ordinance and go get you a bunch of guineas
right.
And have another round with the commission.
Livestock is any animal, including but not limited to cattle, both dairy and beef, elk, reindeer, bison, horses, deer, sheep, goats, mules, donkeys, swine, poultry, including the Gallus domesticus chicken and other egg-producing poultry, llamas, alpacas, and any other domesticated animal ordinarily raised or used on farms.
Yeah, but it didn't say anything about elephants.
No, I'm assuming elephants is not domesticated.
Be considered livestock.
Probably not. I don't think you could domesticate one.
Yeah, they're not truly domesticated animals. They've really got to be.
Oh,
trained.
I don't know. They have them on these fairs.
Oh gosh, you go to India or
yeah, they use them.
Thailand. They've got them in people's backyard. Those things are use them for a little bit of everything.
They use them for logging.
That shows ignorance. What about lions and tigers?
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't say that. So
mountain lions.
Whatever I read the other day said you had to have a place to put them up at night and a place they could run in a fenced-in area and couldn't get in your neighbor's yard.
Yeah.
Oh, I got chickens. Or I don't have chickens. My neighbor has chickens, and they come over in the yard all the time. And I keep hoping they'll start laying eggs over there. I'm not going to run them off.
If you start feeding them, they will start laying eggs.
Maybe
over
they
there.
Will.
Build them a little coop.
If you start walking around barefooted, you'll wish that they didn't have chickens.
Well, I understand that part, yeah.
And back to that field line.
For that, you need Canadian geese.
Back to that field line. When I bought my property, there was no perk test or anything, and they come out there and told me what kind of field line I had, and it either cost $10,500 or $11,500, and that's all they would accept. That's pretty expensive.
Yeah. Well, I think that if you're going to have a sewage disposal system in your home that is indoor plumbing, you've got to put in a septic system. Now, there is nothing in the law that says you cannot have a pit privy. You can have a pit privy.
A what?
A pit privy, a what? Johnny.
An outdoor Johnny.
An outdoor Johnny, a half moon on the door. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, okay. An outhouse.
Yeah, a pit privy is perfectly legal. So, I don't know. I'm just throwing that out on the table for a piece of meat to talk about.
Can you still have a privy?
Oh yeah, absolutely. There are designs that are approved by the health department. Yeah.
Flathead, take us to a break.
Two prisoners were making their escape over the jailhouse roof when one of them dislodged a tile. The guard said, "Who's there?" shouted the guard. The first prisoner replied with a convincing imitation of a cat's meow. Reassured, the guard went back to his rounds. When the second prisoner dislodged another tile, the guard repeated, "Who's there?" "The other cat," answered the prisoner.
"Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush me, Bugle, hush and listen," and his cheeks were all aglow. "I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. For the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One word more for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, with your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon." A
Out of many a mud wall cavern, eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly heart was throbbing for the coming morning light. Murmurs ran along the valleys like the banshee's lonely croon, and a thousand pikes were flashing by the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. And a thousand pikes were flashing by the rising of the moon. There beside the singing river that dark mass of men was seen. Far above their shining weapons hung their own beloved green. Dead to every foe and traitor, forward strike the marching tune. And our army buys for freedom, 'tis the rising of the moon.
You may need a pump to pump it. All right. Up in the air.
Next topic.
Well,
have you got?
What are you thinking?
Excuse me. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
If you got Reverend Pierce's latest rant, he put in his paper.
I brought the paper.
That list of stuff.
Yeah, it's. I'll go.
I just wondered, I have
the English churchman on the agenda.
Okay.
Well, while you're looking up whatever you're going to do, I want to hear what you all think about ex-FBI agent Charles McGonagall. How do you pronounce his name? McGonagall?
Yeah, I think you got it right. Yeah.
McGonagall. Oh, you've got something to talk about. You want to talk about it?
Well, it's just a short blurb.
Well, I heard a little segment on it, and I can remember probably 10% of what I heard. Maybe the colonel knows all in detail.
I can read this one half of a paragraph.
Well, no, let me tell you what I've heard. This guy, he was a section chief in the New York FBI office, and he was in charge of. I can't remember the title of the actual department. So this guy is not just a peon.
No, he was promoted to in charge of the intelligence agency that he was. I mean, he wasn't just a worker bee. He was number one in charge of the intelligence department.
A division or something.
Yeah, right. And so they have arrested him, and they've arrested him for several things. One of the things is he's the one that helped, one of the ones that helped cook up this alleged Russia collusion.
Russiagate.
On Trump. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, that's all been debunked and proved that was all made up. And he also apparently was working, had been originally sent to work to... get these oligarchs in Russia to be what do you call them when the U.S. Blacklist them? They put them on. They sanction them. They were going to sanction these oligarchs. So his job was to get them posted and sanctioned. Well, and as things turned out, he ends up, I think, leaving the FBI, and then he ends up working for one of these oligarchs and ends up getting over a $250,000, I think.
I think he was getting paid while he was still on the committee when he was investigating Trump.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
He was actually working for Russia, getting paid by Russia while he was trying to accuse Trump of getting paid by Russia. So I mean, it's projection in the hundredth degree.
Well, and here,
let me read his title. He is the former director of cybersecurity policy, strategy, and international affairs in the office of the Secretary of Defense.
Well, and you think about, and this whole thing is not just a connection from him to Trump. I mean, there's this whole spider web of different actors that are involved in all this. So I'm wondering, when this all comes out, is there going to be a spilling of the beans, and we're going to find out. We already know. We're going to find out how corrupt everything really is.
No, because there's too many people who are going to be implicated, and those people are in Washington as your representatives and your senators.
So he's just the fall guy.
He'll take the fall. Everybody else is just going to be sitting there making sure their checkbooks don't change.
It's the old J.E. syndrome, Jeffrey Epstein.
Did you hear that they, I don't know if you watched Tucker last night, but he was talking about that everything about Epstein's supposed suicide is all being debunked, because even the main, one of the pathologists said, no, he did not commit suicide. He was strangled.
He was murdered.
Yeah, he was murdered. And the people, all of his friends, are all happy that he's dead because he can't implicate them.
Why would anybody want to murder Jeffrey Epstein? He was a nice guy.
He was like J. Edgar Hoover. He knew everybody. He had something on everybody.
That's about
it. But anyway, this guy, I'm wondering why the FBI even came after this guy. I mean, because they're just going to, I mean, why not just leave the guy alone and not do anything?
I was thinking the same thing. And I think what it is they got to, the FBI has got this heat of the Republicans breathing down their throat, and they have got to come up with something. And I think this was what they decided to do.
I don't think it's the Republicans. I think they have lost credibility with the average citizen. And that's of more concern to them, and should be of more concern to them than what some people that are Republicans in the House or the Senate, because ultimately this could mean the end of the FBI.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
Well, it should be.
I think we have no need for them now. They've lost their usefulness.
That's what I'm getting at. This is not some off-the-wall strange idea that people had, like I had, 10 years ago. We don't need the FBI.
No,
we've got
we don't.
50 GBIs. We've got 50 Department of Public Safety. We've got all of these law enforcement people everywhere. What do we need? What can they do that these don't already do? The only thing they can do is mischief. That's all they can do.
Well, people are realizing we've got a two-tier justice system just by looking at how Trump was treated with his documents and how Biden and Pence and Lord knows who else is going to turn up, how they're being treated with their documents.
It's interesting. Biden was derogatory to Trump about him having these documents, and then guess what? He gets documents, and then Pence comes along and is poo-pooing Trump for having documents, and guess what?
He ends up
with documents.
I think Black Dog has a theory about this.
Which
I don't believe that.
Yeah, he does.
What about
Pence?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, Pence came out and admonished Trump for having the documents and said how irresponsible it was, and then Pence comes out and turns out he's had documents.
But he didn't do that until Biden had the heat turned up on him. So your theory was?
Well, my theory is that Pence is protecting Biden.
But he's taking the heat.
Well, he's taking the heat off of Biden, because if more than one or two people have these documents, and well, it's no big deal. And I mean, the media and even some of the Democrats in Washington are saying, well, everybody does it. I mean, it's not a big deal.
My wife said she was going to rehide hers, so they couldn't be found.
I wonder how many people are in jail for misusing classified documents.
If you're not a high-level person and if you're not a politician, you're probably in jail.
Every spy that we've convicted over the last 30 years and put in jail, what did they give to the Russians or to some other country?
Classified
documents.
They
gave them classified information.
Well, now the Republicans want to go after Hunter Biden, and they are subpoenaing the art dealer, the New York art dealer, who is selling Hunter Biden's paintings. They want to see exactly who purchased the paintings and how much they paid for them, because they want to see how many of them are from China. How many buyers are from China?
China,
so it's going to be interesting.
China has a particular appetite for Biden's style of painting.
Yeah.
I think that's there may be some particular city or some province where they have a cultural attaché or whatever there that has a particular interest in that style of painting. Don't you think that's it?
Definitely. I guess they couldn't go to a middle school and buy paintings from the middle school, which would probably be better than what Hunter's painting.
All right. What were we covering? We're talking about the FBI.
I had something that y'all might be interested in. I found this this afternoon, and I've watched several little clips and episodes about Elon Musk, and I confess I don't fully understand what he's done, what he is doing, what in the past and so on. This is from Charles Haygood, who does a newsletter, I guess. I never heard of him. But here is his latest comments about Elon Musk. He says, today I follow up a tweet back in November which shows that Elon Musk has won. I claimed that his firings by themselves moved Twitter from negative profit to the profit margin of Apple or Google, approaching 30%. And he says, I was 100% correct, but I underestimated the new profit margin. Last week, Musk said Twitter now had 2,300 employees. This means my estimate that Musk had fired 70% of Twitter's employees was nearly exactly on target. However, I appear to have underestimated the cost savings. I had estimated that 58% of Twitter's expenses were personnel cost. A 41% drop would be saving $2.4 billion. Given that net loss was $1.1 billion, I said new annualized profit would be $1.3 billion if he'd fired all these people. And he says, as before, I am using, it goes into annualized cost. These numbers imply that each worthless eater, that's what he calls a Twitter employee, is a worthless eater. Each worthless eater fired by Musk had cost the company more than $400,000 per year, plus all the negative stuff that they did. Some said salaries could not be that high. Well, that was false. A recent letter from a fella says the average salary at Alphabet, which is supposedly a competitor, I never heard of Alphabet, is much higher than $300,000. Anyway, I won't read the whole thing, but anyway, thus, more likely each Twitter employee fired saved $500,000 for every one of those two 2,500, meaning a total savings of more than $2.7 billion or more. That means the new annualized projected profit, ignoring revenue, could be as much as $2 billion. Hard to say, but very high. So, and I'll read just the last little thing he has down here. It says, as all other predictions, Musk critics have been falsified. As I predicted, but contrary to common wisdom, not only has Twitter not collapsed, but it has functionally vastly improved. Nobody is moving to this other company. There will be growing pains, but there won't be dangers. However, the main crucial takeaway from all of this for society as a whole is not that Musk is competent, but that nobody can deny that the mass majority of employees at each tech firm are worse than worthless. Worthless.
Well, did you see Facebook is reinstating Trump?
Yeah. Twitter is too.
Well, Twitter, yeah, that was one of the first things Musk did when he took over Twitter. But
so it's going to be interesting to see what the backs.
And Trump still got True Social, so yeah. It's going to be interesting to see.
Don't you think that this demonstrates that Elon Musk understood the Pareto principle to its fullest extent, and that is that the square root of the employees in any organization do over 80% of all the work?
How many massage therapists did Google lay off? 30,000?
More than that. I think Google
massage therapist.
Massage therapist, yeah.
Yeah, Google laid off. Google is having mass layoffs. Meta is having mass layoffs. Microsoft is having mass layoffs.
Well, you know, think about another thing to think about when you're talking about Elon Musk is this rocket. What's the name of it?
SpaceX.
SpaceX. His company, SpaceX. Think about what it has done. If you look at the space program and you had Wernher von Braun and, you know, and then you had the best the government could come up with trying to launch rockets and go to the moon, and Musk has, there were a lot of failures, a lot of problems, but Musk, look at what he's doing. He's reusing all of his rockets. And
he's put NASA out of business.
Yeah, NASA just hires him. If they need something done, if they need to put a satellite in orbit, hey, I've got a rocket going up day after tomorrow. You want to hitch a ride?
I'm all for privatizing all of these government agencies.
I heard him talking about it. He was talking about how the ideal situation is reusability. In other words, when you fire off a rocket, it doesn't blow up, and that's it. You use it, it comes back to Earth, and you do it again. And so he's doing.
That's what you do with your car.
Yeah. And he compared it to that. He compared it to, you don't want to get in a car and drive it. When you get where you're going, it just blows up.
His cars do, but that's...
His cars burn down.
Tesla is dying a slow, painful death right now because people aren't buying those cars. People aren't buying electric cars at all.
I think when the new wears off and people really figure out about electric cars, it'll take care of itself.
Well, people can't afford them. They can't afford the cost. They can't afford the upkeep on them.
I think that's what engineer number one just said.
Yeah.
Without saying it.
Well, and there's another big cost that the car companies don't have to pay, but the infrastructure to keep them charged. They want the non-electric car drivers to pay for their infrastructure through taxes.
Did you hear what Scotty said about Hertz?
No.
Oh, you ought to hear. That's a good series. Scotty is talking about how insane Hertz rent-a-car company is because they made a statement they were going to go totally electric.
Oh, no, I haven't heard that.
Well, now, this has been a while. They've changed their minds.
What are the pizza companies, Domino's or Papa
They're
Jones?
All going, yeah, they've got those electric cars. But, those delivery places, like the Domino's right here in Ringgold, they do not deliver to us because we are outside of their zone. Now, Hidden Ridge, which is right behind us, they deliver there. They don't deliver here. And I talked to them. I said, I can go to Hidden Ridge, just go to my backyard, and could I just meet you over there? And they said, no, we need an address.
You know why? Because y'all don't give tips, and the people in Hidden Ridge do.
No, we give good tips over. We give
you
good
took
tips.
The words right out of my mouth.
You know, the difference is the people. Well, I can say one thing about the people in Hidden Ridge. They give out full size candy bars on Halloween.
Yeah, I know. We're giving you a hard time.
Well, now
what if they got you back now?
The pizza people, though, actually. It would not be a bad idea if they could come up with a way you could have a driverless vehicle that takes a pizza to somebody and comes back.
Well, they could just ship it out via drone.
Well, yeah. I know. I'm just saying that whole idea about not taking a live person to the door, if you can figure out a way to do that, that'd be a good thing. But now putting everybody and their brother who wants to go somewhere in a electric vehicle doesn't make any sense.
Yep. But before we leave, Musk, I've got a question. I thought he was in the middle of a trial in California where they're trying to do something to him because of a tweet that he sent out having to do that impacted the stock price of one of his companies. What was that all about?
I didn't hear anything.
I do not remember the facts. I do remember discussion of the case. But, there are lots of lawsuits going around with all kinds of folks. It's one of those things that hasn't gotten traction.
The thing about of Musk that's different to me is that he is an engineer and that he thinks like one. He's not a politician. He doesn't claim to be a politician. And he looks at a task and how do you accomplish the mission? And, I mean, that's the way he approaches his business and everything. When he was building Teslas, they say he used to sleep on the floor, on the assembly line floor, where the employees could see him, and they knew he was there watching what he was doing and involved in everything they did. I mean, the guy is driven, and
he's hands-on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so I don't know how much success he'll have, but Twitter. He may have more success with Twitter than he will with Tesla.
Speaking of electric cars, and this gets into the politics, and it also gets into the politics in Europe. But there's a lot of discussion about carbon credits, and of course, last week we had the great guru. Senator Kerry, being privileged, he said, to be among a group of people who have decided that they are going to figure out how to save the world. And I thought he felt privileged to be able to be one of those people. And I certainly agree that if that's what he's doing, he's indeed privileged. But as part of this carbon credits business that's going on in Europe, a lady who is from Sweden, her name is Vladardinger Brook, Vladardingerbrook. She's a lady in her late 20s, I guess, maybe early 30s. First name is Eva. And she was on a show in Europe, and it only takes a couple of minutes. But I think what she had to say is it doesn't fit exactly what y'all are talking about, but I think it's worthy of discussion, and it's coming our way.
It's not just a passport that you will have on your iPhone in a digital form. It entails just about everything the government would like to know about you. And yesterday in the Dutch media, we saw a perfect example of what it could entail in the near future. We had the CEO of one of the largest Dutch banks say, "Why don't we start with a personal carbon credit?"
Oh.
A carbon wallet, she called it, actually. Yeah. So right in line with the plans that the World Economic Forum people have for us. And she said it in a way that was particularly funny. She said, well, if everyone gets an individual personal carbon credit, why don't we make it so that rich people who, for example, want to go on holiday a little too often, can buy personal carbon credit from other people who, for example, can't afford buying plane tickets or eating meat too often, so we can that way swap it out.
Oh, so if Bill Gates or Leonardo DiCaprio's carbon footprint is getting a bit too big, then some peasant living in his hovel up country somewhere can sell his, and he can't afford to go to Saint-Tropez, but he'll be able to sell his carbon allowance to Leonardo DiCaprio so Leonardo can park his yacht in Saint-Tropez for a couple of extra days.
Exactly right. That's it. So what will happen is the rich will get richer, the poor will get poorer, and they're saying it openly as if it's not a controversial thing at all. Yeah. It's neo-feudalism. That's what it is. Yeah. And they don't mind. You know, it's just, yeah, okay. Then they said, well, it's just a thought experiment, because obviously a lot of people were kind of upset about this communist ideal that they just presented to the people on TV as a good idea. They said, oh, no, it's a thought experiment. Well, we've heard that before.
Yeah, we've had too many thought experiments. But it was interesting to see, as you were talking, we saw that banker. She was being interviewed on a Dutch radio show, and she got a little too relaxed. And actually, as they say in America, said the quiet part out loud. You're not actually meant to. There she is. She's chatting in the radio studio, and she just gets a little carried away. And we weren't meant to announce. Now, you know, there's a bank vice president in Canada. I think it was the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce, which is one of the biggest banks in Canada, said pretty much the same thing and sold it on. This is going to be so convenient, because all your information will be centrally located, so we can save the planet. We're just going to keep track of how many miles you do in your car, whether you've taken one too many vacations in the Greek islands, if you're eating too many cheeseburgers. It'll all be centrally located, and that will make it all the more convenient for you.
Yeah, and they're being honest, so they're exposing their true agenda, because obviously the best way to get to a modern person's heart is to say that it's convenient for them. So yes, you won't have to carry all your different papers and your passports, but the downside of it is, and I hope that people will start to see this, that the government can shut you down. So you know, if you want to buy a burger, red screen, no mark, not for you. That flight, not for you. Oh, but you can just buy it if you have enough money, right? So they're being very open and honest to what their goal is here. So we should take their words seriously and say, hell no. And instead, this woman going off on radio and saying exactly what she thinks. Now, we had backlash, right? So people were upset about it, but she's invited on national television tonight. So in an hour, she will be sitting there talking about this great thought experiment. And then suddenly it's part of the debate and it's accepted. Whereas I would say we should cancel these communists immediately and say, get the hell out of my private life. I'm not having you track me and decide what I eat and where I go.
It's a one-world government.
Well, you know,
I'm glad we got people at Davos who can save the world.
Yeah,
I'm relieved. You know, they fly in their jets, pollute the air, and tell us how they're going to save the world. But they're after your car. They are after your gasoline-burning car.
And your stove, your gas-burning stove. They're after that too. They want everything electric so they can. They can control you.
Because they can meter it.
Well, they can meter it and they can turn it off.
And they can turn
anytime.
It off.
Yeah.
They can disconnect you.
Exactly. Well, that's the other thing. Like out in China, they've got the social credit score. And if you say anything or do anything the Chinese government doesn't like, all of a sudden you find out you have no more money because they've seized everything.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, oddly enough, this very thing. Day before yesterday, I went to Arby's, and everybody in there was using their credit card to buy a hamburger and an order of French fries and a Coca-Cola. And she asked me, and I opened up my wallet, and it was like I had come from outer space, that I was actually going to give her cash. And then she had to figure out, you know, how much the change was and all that kind of stuff. I won't go into that. But then I thought, my goodness, if you're interconnected through the internet to a master computer and you know my name and my Bank AmeriCard goes through and I'm on a no-fly list or I'm in a no-burger list, then it will come up with this nice little red flag. And then I see this on YouTube and I'm thinking, maybe this is one of those things that's filtering into our society and we're beginning to accept it and we don't realize it.
Well, everybody uses a debit card now when they go, whatever they buy.
And we'll soon have 80,000 IRS armed agents to check your files and see what you're doing.
Yeah. And be sure that you're signed up properly on the facial recognition and fingerprint and DNA analysis computer.
And maybe eventually prohibit you from paying cash for anything less than over $50, $20, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, they're there and you don't know it. My wife and I were sitting around talking, I think it was forgotten what it was. It was something like bedspreads or something. We were talking about it, and then there was another subject we were talking about, refrigerators or dishwashers or something. This morning when she got her cell phone out and opened it up, there were all kind of ads for bedspreads, ads for dishwashers.
And
it's not a coincidence.
And that's
we don't know whether it's coming through her phone. We have Alexa at the house.
That's where it's coming from.
Yeah, that's it.
And so somehow Alexa's picking up on it, and then it's transmitting it through to her cell phone.
Well, it's going through Google. And then all of a sudden, Google is putting up all these ads for bedspreads and refrigerators.
We were just sitting around talking about stuff.
Well, you know, when you've got Google or Alexa in your home, it's always listening in your phone.
It's giving you your what your approbation wants. You know, your approbation of your flesh. This is what you communicate. These are your desires, what it is. In years past, you might talk about something, but nobody's going to, after you talk about it, they're not going to show up 15 minutes later knocking on the door with a satchel saying, I got some of this for you.
Well, you know.
It's sort of like last week when I said this couple that we know, they walk around the house. They have Alexa also. They walk around the house and say, we love Biden. We love Biden.
Well, they'd be very boring in my house because we don't talk about anything, so they'd be very bored.
I think I'll try that. I think at my house, I'm going to talk about we need a new refrigerator.
Yeah, and see what happens.
And we'll see what happens.
Well, you know, you were talking about the no money, centralized, having a credit, you know, everybody having a credit card, and the IRS... that they're hiring 87,000 new agents. One of the things they're going to be looking at is if you make transactions of $600 or more, that's going to get flagged.
Well, I have some good news. This is from Revolver. What's that website? Revolver News. And it, you know, it just has all these bullets of news flashes. And this one says, LGBTO families are leaving the state of Florida.
Good. I can't imagine.
Think about it.
It's all right. The Pope's
welcoming them.
There you go. In. Yeah, he said all bishops need to start allowing all those people in the church because it's not illegal. And I'm thinking, man, you got two big problems here. In the first place, it doesn't matter whether it's illegal or not. It goes against the Bible. And I thought that's what you were supposed to be preaching.
Well, you ask about the English churchman.
Yeah, I did.
So you'd had the greatest segue that I've ever heard.
It would have worked, didn't it?
The colonel needs to give his history, but let's do this. Do a break. Do the colonel's history.
Then we'll do that.
Okay. Since we're already getting into this.
Somebody give me a Bible topic when we get off the air here. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm just going to read a little bit of this article. Or do you want to admit?
Let's take a break.
Okay.
Do the history.
Okay.
And then we'll get to that.
Okay. Finish up with that. Let me tell a story.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
This boy was selling newspapers outside the courthouse. Read all about it. Two men swindled. A man walked up to the boy, bought a paper, sat down and read it. Hey, kid. He protested a few minutes later. There's nothing in here about two men being cheated. Extra, extra. Three men swindled.
Wait a minute before you go.
Let
me see if I can remember this.
Okay.
This guy was driving down the road, and this woman on a bicycle over there on the other side, on the right side of him, and he rolled the window down and looked at her and said, "Cow!" And... she looked at him, and then she stuck up her middle finger at him and kept on going, and then wham, slammed right into a cow. He said, "I tried."
All right.
Yep. Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess the colonel can give us some history. You got some history for us? Let him get his hearing aid adjusted properly.
Are we on the air?
Yeah, we're on the air. He couldn't get his computer working right, so he's having to reboot things.
Okay. My daddy put me in the field driving a truck when I was about 10 years old. All I needed was just one gear and go from shock to shock while he put the hay on the truck.
Did he adjust the throttle?
Huh?
Did he adjust the choke to keep it running right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It had a throttle.
Yeah.
Then when I was 16, He sent me and another guy to Chicago to buy a load of cattle. He gave me a money belt with $5,000 in it to pay for the cattle. We didn't know anything about Chicago. We knew if we stayed on 41 Highway long enough, sooner or later we'd get to Chicago. And then we'd ask around and try to find out where we're going. Also at 16, he sent me to Lyons, down south of Dublin, pick up a load of hogs on two-ton truck. 250 miles down there and 250 miles back. I often wondered why he was pushing me so hard. And then I suddenly realized he didn't have any choice. You know, he was a subsistence farmer at that time. And he had himself and his wife and his kids. And sometimes he had his back to the wall and really didn't have any choice. And we weren't all that different from everybody else in Catoosa County. After the Second World War, you couldn't hire anybody. And it didn't matter because you didn't have any money to pay them anyhow. And so what the man and his wife and his kids didn't get done, they just didn't get done. We had two girls in high school that had problems staying awake in class. Well, the reason was they got up in the middle of the night and built 20 cows before they caught the bus to come to school. They had something else going for them also. They wore faded Levi's that were so tight, looks like if you stuck them with a pin, they would explode. But what we learn out of all this is that you really don't know what you can do. You really don't know what you can do if you have to. And that followed me all my life, you know. If you get your back to the wall, you'd be surprised what you can do. But things are better now. Kids don't have to get up in the middle of the night and milk cows. And I'm glad, because it was not a pleasant time to live through.
Okay. What are we going to do? See, I'm all out of whack here now. But if you can't go there, where am I going to go? See, the computer, this thing is, it's crazy anymore. Black Dog will vouch for that.
Why, what's it doing?
All kinds of crazy stuff. Jumping time. All right, we'll play this one. If it'll play. Wow.
That's not playing either?
Maybe it will in a minute. Let's see.
There we go.
Wow.
Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush me, Bugle, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon. For the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. For the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One word more for signal token, whistle up the marching tune. With your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. With your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out of many a mud wall cabin, eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly heart was throbbing for the coming morning light.
Murmurs ran along the valleys like the banshee's lonely croon, and 1,000 pikes were flashing by the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. And 1,000 pikes were flashing by the rising of the moon. There beside the singing river that dark mass of men was seen. Far above their shining weapons hung their own beloved green. Dead to every foe and traitor, forward strike the marching tune. And our army buys for freedom, 'tis the rising of the moon.
All right, we're back live. I'm losing it here.
All right, is now the time?
It is.
Now is the time of our salvation. Now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their party. The English Churchman, Friday, the 27th of January, 2023. This is the 26th, which means I'm on the subway and I crossed through a time warp, and I'm now in the 27th of January. Of English Churchman, our great Right Reverend theological advisor Christopher Pierce, the editor of the English Churchman, has on the front page of the English Churchman, GAFCON's response to blessing same-sex civil marriages. The headline says, God does not bless sin. Issues new call for English bishops to repent. This is not from Reverend Pierce. This is something that was written, and I'll read it. It's a letter. The response of Archbishop Foley Beach, primate of the Anglican Church in North America and chairman of GAFCON, to the announcement from Archbishops Welby and Cottrell that they were supporting blessing same-sex marriages is quite telling. Beach wrote, I write to you with a heavy heart as we are hearing of the continued crisis of leadership and faith coming out of the Church of England. Once again, our Western Anglican provinces continue to go their own way on matters of faith and practice without consultation or concern for the majority of Anglicans around the global communion. Their actions not only deny holy practice, but reject the authority of Scripture. The teaching of the historic church and the consensus of the body of Christ from every tribe, tongue, people, and nation alive today. The reason of the release of the recent statement, quotation, bishops propose prayers of thanksgiving, dedication, and for God's blessing of same-sex couples, end quote, is a clear rejection of Lambeth 1998, section 110, and cannot help but ask the question, what is next? We continue to find ourselves disillusioned with the incredible audacity of major unilateral decisions, for example, changing the nature of what it means to be male and female, in his image, Genesis 1:27, that run counter to the faith once delivered in Jude 3. What makes this current and continued crisis of leadership and faith in the Church of England especially troubling is the clear and willful decision by the bishops to blatantly ignore the global Anglican consensus, as well as many more other Christian traditions, and bless in the name of Christ and the church what God clearly calls sin. God does not bless sin, regardless of the stamp of endorsement by church leaders, clergy, and bishops. Most of our provinces have their origins in the Church of England because of the incredible and sacrificial missionary ministry of faithful British followers of Jesus. What are the faithful in England and around the world to do now that the Mother Church has departed from biblical faith and morality? We cannot follow the Church of England down this path, which leads to spiritual and moral bankruptcy. Lord, have mercy upon us. Beach set out the distinction of the mission of GAFCON as opposed to what is being taught. GAFCON has a better story to tell, etc., etc. There's a number of, the very last it says, brothers and sisters, let us pray earnestly for the faithful followers of Jesus Christ, the Church of England, as they struggle to fight and repel this false teaching which has been thrust upon them. Let us also pray for their bishops and leaders that God would turn their hearts to return his ways. And they also called for the Archbishop of England to repent.
I saw something yesterday, I guess it was, about on the same subject of what's going on in the Methodist Church. And they had a fellow that really explained it in a very common sense way. And I guess to summarize, apparently 56 to almost 60% of what he would call traditional Methodist are active in the church and don't accept the homosexual, all this homosexual stuff. And what's happening is those are the people that are having to leave the church and start another denomination or another church. And he said, well, why, he brought out the question, well, why is that? And he said, because these other people, and he didn't put it this way, this is my interpretation, these other people are just wicked, and they will stick to their guns. If there's only two of them left, they'd fight it to the very end. And he said, because of that, the traditional people that believe the scriptures are the ones, even though they're in the majority, are having to leave and start another congregation or another denomination.
The homosexual bishop of the Northwest Georgia Association of the Methodist Church has ruled that no churches can separate from the church. None.
This is new, isn't it? Isn't this something?
Yeah. Yes, it is. It is new. And it's in direct contravention to the last congregational or conference vote. So Hitler has spoken.
I don't know why this...
That all boils down to facilities and the money associated with that.
I'm not sure why. One reason why she may have done this is because she's a homosexual. Mm-hmm. And don't want people leaving because of that. The other reason is there may have been so many little independent, not independent, but small Methodist churches that decided they wanted to leave and were applying to get out, that the conference has a financial problem.
Yeah, absolutely they're going to have a conference. And because I'm convinced the conservative members of the church are the ones that really do support it financially.
They may keep the building, but the people that don't believe in that, they're going to leave. They're not going to sit there and abuse.
It's going to be interesting to see how these little Methodist churches react.
Well, what happens?
And I think these little Methodist churches in these counties around North Georgia, when the homosexual bishop shows up in court, in the courthouse at the county seat, and the judge who holds himself out for election every 4 years is sitting on the bench, that bishop's going to get a little home cooking. when it comes time for a judicial hearing.
The North Georgia Conference has the largest number of Methodist churches in the United States in a conference. There's more churches in North Georgia than anywhere else in the country.
Well, what happens if you're in a Methodist church and you decide you don't want to be part of the Methodist church anymore? Can't everybody in the congregation...
You just walk out the door, get in your car, and leave.
Yeah, and can't they just start up another church, another denomination?
If they want to.
Or?
Well, you have to think about it. Yep, the answer is yes, you can do that, but let's say that same congregation wanted to start another church. Okay. Let's say you got 300 members in that church, and 180 of them leave. They got to come up with $10 million.
For what?
You got to buy at least 10 acres. You got to buy 10 acres. And then once you get the 10 acres bought and paid for, then you got to spend $4 or $5 million on a
building
facilities. So you know you're looking at a huge financial deal, and that's
so the membership cannot vote to leave and keep the church. The physical church.
Okay.
Belongs to the.
It's kind of like the Catholic Church. It's a patriarchal kind of a thing.
The other thing that's so difficult about these members is their grandparents, their parents, and them have been paying for that facility for 100 years or more, and now you've got this black homosexual woman in Atlanta taking it all away from them.
The same thing happened in Savannah, Georgia, about 20 years ago. The Episcopal Church in downtown Savannah that was there when John Wesley came to Savannah, that church was there. And it has had, and it's been in continual, it's right smack downtown on one of the squares. And it went to court and went all the way to, I don't know whether it went beyond the Georgia Supreme Court, but they lost. And they lost things like the silver trays that their family gave to the church 200 years ago. Just all kinds of things that...
Tradition.
Tradition that people, that it's not bad tradition. And they lost it all, and that church ended up having to go to another part of town.
Well, that's what happens when you have a denomination where the power is from the top down. Yes.
That's right. Yes.
Try that on a Baptist church.
Yes, that's one great thing about a Baptist church.
Now
they have control.
Yeah, there's only one problem with that. In order to get things done at the Baptist church efficiently and quickly, you have to go talk to the wife of the chairman of the deacons.
Yeah, then
it'll all work out.
But at least it's within their own purview. Haven't got somebody
can't you
500
tell when
miles
joking?
Away dictating to the church.
At least you know where the power
is.
Sure
it is.
Well, we go to a non-denominational church. It's in a pole barn. So you don't need to build up a whole big brick-and-mortar building. You put up a pole barn.
And Jesus Christ wore sandals and a robe, like whatever the normal dress was for Jews in the time of his life. And he got 12 guys together. And now we have billions of people who profess to be Christians. Many of them are mature believers, not all of them, maybe not half of them, maybe not 20% of them. But a whole lot of them are mature believers. And it just came from those 12 people. So it's not right what the homosexual bishop is doing. But in the long run, that's not going to run the gospel away. She can do whatever that, you know, what she wants to do.
Well, it puts a strain on the average church person.
Sure, yeah, it does.
Are you want to stick with what you believe and walk off and leave your real estate? Or do you want to bend, keep your real estate, and listen to
a reprobate?
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see what the people do.
as a follow-up on this article, can I go ahead and finish this? I don't want to keep y'all from saying anything. But the Church of England, this is the second article that Mr. Pierce put together. And this he did. He said, the Church of England by no bishops, bishops in name only, they're binos now, B-I-N-O, as opposed to rhino, Republican in name only, binos, bishops in name only, who have commended the prayers for same-sex marriage blessings. The names at the time of going to press, now he said some may change, the diocesan bishops in parentheses, 25, and then he names, I'm not going to read all of them, I'm going to read two or three of them, Stephen Croft, Oxford, John Inage, Worcester, Jonathan Frost, Portsmouth, Christopher Chesson, Southwark. Now, the suffragan bishops, 33, I'll name a few of them, Alan Wilson, Olivia Graham, Martin Gorick, now that's 25, that's 80. Now, they've got about 400 or 500 bishops all over the world. Okay? So we're just talking about these are the ones that have said that they will and go along with same-sex marriage blessings. And then at the bottom of the article, halfway through it, he's got a picture of the parable of the blind by Peter Bruegel the Elder, 1568, a painting of the blind leading the blind. So anyway, bishops that have condemned the proposals to bless same-sex civil marriages. And then he's got at the bottom, as of press time, no sitting bishop within the Church of England have condemned the proposals to bless same-sex civil marriages. And he's got a great big zero, goose egg, down at the bottom. No one has condemned it. And these 80-something, you know, spineless bunch. So I thought I'm assuming this is what you were talking about earlier. Yeah. How did you find out about this? Did you get the churchman in the email?
No, he posted it on Facebook, and I just happened to be on Facebook and see it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw that post also. But, you know, I'm not, I think it's terrible that those bishops have come out and supported it, but I also think that the ones who are remaining silent, who don't want to say that they don't support it, they are just as bad or worse than the ones coming out publicly supporting it.
Yeah, what is it Jesus said about salt. What is it? Hot or cold? What does he say?
Hot or cold? Let's be.
Yeah. Hot or cold is okay, but if you're lukewarm, I'll spit you out of my mouth.
Yeah.
I mean. Well, what's going to happen is these churches are just going to end up empty. The Methodist Church will own the building, but there won't be anybody attending.
Well, it's not the church anyway. I mean, the church doesn't. The building doesn't make the church. It's the people in the church.
No, that's not the case, but I'm just saying that's what they want to keep the facilities and think that's going to capture the people, but it's not going to do that.
We don't have time. Next week we will have a follow-up on this. He's got his editorial, which is really worth discussing.
I've got something real quick.
Yeah, good. That's what we need.
There is a white football player who he was recorded singing along in his car to a rap song that had the N-word in it. And it was posted on Facebook, and he's a high school student, and he was awarded a scholarship at the University of Florida. Well, University of Florida, they withdrew the scholarship because of this video with him singing along to a rap song with the N-word in it. And he also was offered a scholarship over at Penn State, and they pulled back on the scholarship. So now it appears there is one school that is offering him a scholarship.
And the Abbeville Institute?
No, Albany, a historically black college. Albany State University in Georgia has offered him a scholarship. So go figure.
It's quite simple. the song, that rap song, was composed by a black man.
It was. It was.
And he used the N-word.
He did.
It's who uses it.
I just
think that's crazy.
I think it's funny that, you know, University of Florida withdraws his scholarship, and then a black college offers him a scholarship.
I think you ought to take it, and he'll probably, the team will do quite well.
The way things are going,
Albany State shouldn't have any trouble beating Florida this year.
They probably want him to get him on campus so they can kill him.
Yeah. All right. We hadn't talked about the vaccine. We've got, what, about 4 minutes left? You want to quit?
No, I'm fine. This is
the latest report on the vaccine.
Well, let's hear it.
Just a brief evening update for Wednesday the 25th. I wanted to bring you this sort of hot off the press. It's from the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation. And basically what they're saying is, as from the 12th of next month, healthy under 50s are not going to be eligible for COVID vaccination in the UK. Some might say this is a sensible targeting of resources as we move towards endemicity. Others might suggest it's frantic backpedalling. The report is written in very positive language about this move to a more rational distribution of resources. Nothing about side effects, nothing about adverse reactions, nothing about change in risk-benefit analysis. Some of you might find what I'm about to say fairly pathetic. But let's do it anyway. JVCI makes interim recommendations, and we can expect these to be taken up by the government, of course. Has advised that plans should be made for those at higher risk of severe COVID-19 to be offered a booster vaccination this autumn, so looking ahead. So it's not saying that young people are at minimal risk, especially in the age of Omicron. It's not saying that we've now got huge amounts of natural immunity. It's not saying we've now got huge amounts of mucosal immunity. No, it's just a simple rationalisation and targeting of resources. Professor Lim, Chair. As the transition continues away from a pandemic emergency response towards pandemic recovery, in England, the closure of the autumn booster campaign will be on the 12th of February 2023. Still over 2 weeks away, I guess. 2.5 weeks away. Basically, it means no more boosters for healthy under 50s, which we are, of course, very pleased to... very pleased to see. Similarly, the JVCI is advising that the primary course of COVID vaccination should move over the course of 2023 towards a more targeted offer. So this is going to include primary immunisation as well as the boosters fairly soon. And this is all here. Read it for yourself. It's just put in language which makes everything sound so positive. There's no mention of anything negative. It really does strike me as being... It's not written in a genuine way as far as I can see, but...
Before you leave that, I saw a video of one of the senior corporate executives from Pfizer bragging about the fact that they are doing, here in the United States, gain of function... developing new, horrible, whatever you call these things, that viruses, and they plan to let those get out so that a lot of people will come down with this and they can come up with a new vaccine and make money.
August 2022, and over can get a first and second dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. At the moment, in my country, you can take a perfectly healthy child in to see a professional healthcare advisor, healthcare practitioner, and they will inject a healthy 5-year-old child with a messenger ribonucleic acid vaccine. That is the current position in my country at the moment.
That's crazy.
Nobody seems to know what to say.
The world has gone nuts.
Completely.
Well, you have to wonder the sudden rash of all of these people in their teens, 20s, 30s who are suddenly dropping dead.
Yeah. Pericarditis, all kinds of inflammation.
If you say anything that it could be
because of the vaccine, you're automatically labeled a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, or a racist, or yeah, both.
One of the three.
All right. Black Dog wanted to know what the Bible said about money. So here we go. Hebrews 13, verse 5. Keep your life free from love of money and be content with what you have. For he has said, quote, I will never leave you nor forsake you, end quote.
Luke 12:15. Then he said to them, take care and be on your guard against covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions.
Proverbs 13:11. Wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it.
Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 10. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This is also vanity.
Matthew 6:24. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money.
Proverbs 22:7. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is the slave of the lender.
1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 10. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs.
And as is our custom at the end of each show, we read from 2 Chronicles 7:14 as follows. If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land.
Be safe, be good, shop Ringo, read your Bible every day, and pray for our country. It needs help.